and occasionally I sort of peter out. You may wonder what I'm doing on this side of the table. You may wonder even more after I get through. But it happened that I mentioned to Frank that I was very interested in this book that I'm collaborating on, and it was about Lytton, and maybe that sometime I could read you part of it. And he said, that's fine, next meeting will do. So here we are. I am just the medium of transferring research material into narrative form. Reverend Cyril Williams has researched this story, which he is very engrossed in, the story of Archdeacon Richard Small, who was third missionary to the interior. And I don't know if you've ever, probably haven't seen a picture of Richard Small. He's a very kindly looking man, very dedicated. Did you ever see a picture of him before? Yes. And the thing that inspired Cyril, oh, incidentally, I have known Cyril for a long time. He is archivist at the School of Theology at UBC at the present time. And it's only just recently that I realized that he had done all this research and needed somebody to put it into a book form for him. So we have just been working together, actually, for 2 or 3 months. I am so interested in it. I just hope that I'll get this across tonight. Perhaps if I read you the foreword that the Most Reverend Ralph S. Dean, Archbishop of Cariboo and Metropolitan of British Columbia, has written for the book, you will understand more about how it has been put together. It says, if ever a book was a labor of love, this is it. The Reverend Cyril E. H. Williams himself served in the Diocese of Cariboo, and every page of his book reveals how he lost his heart to it. Painstaking attention to detail and enormous research is wedded to keen insight in this account of the life and work of the Venerable Richard Small. And it cannot fail to touch the hearts of many who know and love our Indian brethren in Lytton and the surrounding districts. It is a most valuable addition to the historical records of the Anglican Church in British Columbia as a whole, and it rescues from possible oblivion and gathers together in a thrilling matter, much material which goes far beyond the life and work of Mr. Williams' hero. In a day when, thank God, there is a renewal of a sense of obligation to and brotherhood with our Indian people, this story will surely have an honored place. Proud as I am of the Diocese of Cariboo, I am even more to have been asked to write a foreword to a book which has a special place in my affections. May this book have a wide circulation and inspire others to follow in the footsteps of all those missionaries and servants of the cross, of whom Archdeacon Small and Mr. Williams himself are most eloquent examples in the Cariboo. Cyril was at Lytton for 4 years. He was at Merritt for 4 years. And it was while he was at Lytton that he had a stroke at the age of 42. That was 18 years ago. And I would love to have had him here tonight, but he is partially paralyzed and doesn't have transportation in from Vancouver. But he belongs to the Vancouver Historical Society, so maybe you'll meet him on the 28th if we all get over there. Now, I may sit down. I have written 3 chapters of the book, and there are quite a few chapters to go. I thought perhaps if I read you what I had written, and then perhaps if there's time, give you a few excerpts out of the rest of it. The first chapter is a background of the Archdeacon Small himself. The second chapter I have skipped part of because it was a description of the country, the Indian tribes and their languages, etc. Chapter 3 is about Reverend Good, who preceded Archbishop Small. The rest of the book is about Archdeacon Small, and maybe I'll have to return later to give you that part. But anyway, Here's your bedtime story for tonight. The September sun cast a blanket of warmth over the quiet little village of Lytton. Gold medallioned aspens shivered as the breezes whispered through their boughs. The distant clip-clop of a sauntering horse grew more distinct as he and his rider drew near the outlying houses. Young Indian children playing in the dust beside the roadway spotted the approaching pair. "He is here," they called excitedly as they ran off to tell their elders. "He has returned to Kumchin." Incidentally, my Indian dialect is nothing to be admired. If I say something wrong and anybody knows the correction, please correct me. As the people turned out of their houses to greet and wave to him, the slim, middle-aged man on horseback threw off the cloak of fatigue that had weighted his shoulders after the long day's ride and sat straighter in the saddle. Eyes shining with delight, the venerable Archdeacon Richard Small raised his hand to return the greetings. These were his people. Their needs, both spiritual and physical, were his purpose in life. In the annals of Christianity, few clergy have been more beloved than Richard Small, who served God through the Anglican Church in countries spanning half the world. He could have chosen to spend his life in the cultured comforts of England, where he was born and theologically trained. Instead, his burning desire to spread the gospel took him to the untouched wilderness of Lower Central British Columbia in Canada, and later to Korea in the Orient. Wherever he went, his firm faith, his unselfish devotion to his fellow man, and his happy disposition made it easier for those he mingled with to believe in Christian concepts. Richard Small was one of those rare people who at an early age fix on a mission in life and dedicate themselves unwaveringly to it. He made his entry into the world on February the 5th, 1849, as the son of Mr. and Mrs. John Small of Petersfield, Hampshire, England. No doubt his early education at Holbrook Rectory under the guidance of Reverend C.F. Child helped to set the mold for his future career as a missionary for the Anglican Church. He later attended Repton School before following his older brother, Henry, into Corpus Christi College, Cambridge. On September 27, 1869, he was admitted to the college as a pensioner, or in other words, as a student paying his own living in commons. He approached his studies without any nonsense and was honored a year later as a late Mawson Scholar. By the time he was 24 years old, he had earned both his Bachelor of Arts and his Master of Arts degrees. On leaving Cambridge, Richard Small immediately set out on his dedicated path by embracing holy orders. The ordination was held in the chapel within the Episcopal Palace at Ripon, with Bishop Robert Bickersteth officiating. Fittingly enough, the ceremony took place on Sunday, December 21, 1873, the feast of St. Thomas the Apostle. Richard Small's lifetime partnership with God was firmly established. For the rest of his life, three things kept him on an unswerving course: a deep personal sense of religion, an intimate knowledge of the Bible, and a vibrant interest in missionary work. The religious views he held were the result of firm conviction based on study of the Catholicity of the Anglican Church. He thoroughly disliked mere sentimentality or pure ritual where the interpretation of the work of God was concerned. Sound scholarship, together with an intimate acquaintance with the writing of the Tractarian leaders, the Anglo-Catholic divines, and the early fathers of the church, made him eschew anything that had not, as he often expressed it, the flavor of antiquity. In fact, he rarely moved about without his traveling bag weighted down by one or more volumes of patristic theology. Despite his almost fanatical rigidity in his own beliefs, he extended a most gracious charity towards those who could not see things the way he did. His friendships were never narrowed by his unbending orthodoxy. Following his admittance to holy orders, Small was appointed curate of the Holy Trinity Church. And then there's a list of things he did in England.